to Friday. Stay with
Nick
us
Wright,
for a while.
Almost late to class.
Hang out. You're a little lower.
I know. The chair, that's all
gotta
be fix.
That's what look
they said it for. Joe said it for 5'8". Person 5'8".
Please,
got a lot
makes
of
me
jokes.
Feel gargantuan.
A lot of jokes being played on a Friday. Y'all lower my chair.
That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter.
Look nice, nice crispy white
this,
shirt.
This
appreciate
little
that.
Guy
you
here
look nice as well. Nice little
right.
pattern on your shirt.
Guy.
Hi, Jenna Wolf.
Among other topics to be discussed today.
Give me another one, Jenna. I'm telling
yeah,
you.
Yeah, baby. Is LeBron today? James uncoachable? Wait till you hear why we're asking. Aaron Rodgers watches another friend leave the Packers and break out your brackets. We got March Madness to discuss.
Yes.
That's where we are starting this morning. The highly anticipated tournament debut of Ja Morant. And he showed up. The Murray State sophomore went off 17 points, 11 rebounds, 16 assists. It is the first triple-double in the tournament since Draymond Green with Michigan State back in 2012. The 12th-seeded Racers won just their fourth ever NCAA tournament game, upsetting Marquette 83-64. We've been talking about Ja for months now. See, how impressive was he in his tournament debut?
I was more impressed than the stat sheet would say. I know he has a triple-double, and anytime you do that, it's a rare occasion, especially in college basketball. But we've been talking about him for so long, playing totally off of Broadway at Murray State. He's been on the highlights. We know he's explosive, one of the leading scorers in college basketball. Yeah, we know those things. But when you get to the NCAA, with all the type of pressure that the kids are facing, and he's facing a different set of pressure, this national audience that I don't normally have, how many of these games will I play before I turn pro? And his ability to be able to stay patient and stay calm. That's what I thought was in the game. Outside of his overall basketball skills, his ability to go off of the bounce, be able to get to the hole. But, man, they were packing the lane. He wasn't forcing up a bunch of bad shots, which typically in this situation, someone with his resume, that's what they would do. And he's so unselfish. Man, at 19 years old, he has the type of maturity to his game that is beyond his years. So looking at the game yesterday, looking at the hype that was on his game, looking at the way he was defended, man, I thought he played a tremendous game of relying on his teammates. They ran some unbelievable sets. They're well coached. But, man, he is truly one of the top talents that we have in basketball. And only his game's only going to grow.
And for him to stay patient, despite the guy on the other side of the court, Marcus Howard, another All-American, he went off in the first half. He had 16, and this was a four-point game with a few seconds left in the first half until Ja hit that three
yes.
to close the half, and that kind of catapulted them to a second half where they were in full and total control throughout. This guy's a spectacular player. He averaged 10 assists per game this year. No other player in college basketball averaged 8. So the numbers, we've become numb to the triple-double because of Russell Westbrook, because of what we've seen at the NBA level. But at the collegiate level, just for some context, not just the tournament, he went at 15-10-15, hit those benchmarks. Only the second game that's happened in the last 20 years, tournament or regular season. Like, you don't see triple-doubles in the NCAA tournament. There's a reason that you remember what D-Wade did at Marquette. Draymond having a couple when he really announced himself as an all-around player at Michigan State in back-to-back tournament years with Tom Izzo. And the part about Ja's game that is so exciting to watch in this context is the constant improvement. This guy couldn't dunk until his senior year of high school. He was only recruited heavily by one school, and then another school got in late. He played a summer on the same AAU team as Zion Williamson. All the eyeballs on him. Everyone wanted Zion, people ignoring him. And it wasn't because people had overlooked him. It's because he wasn't this player yet. He was good last year, gave you 12-6-6. This year, 25-6-10.
Yeah, only one in the country last year with 12-6-6. We should have saw it coming.
Absolutely.
Very young, too.
100%. Even young, given his class, is what you mean. But to double up, go from 12-6-6, which was great, to 25-6-10, to have a team that right now looks dangerous, a team that right now you don't want to face in this tournament, and for him to show up on that stage against a really good player in Marcus Howard and to be the class of the first day of the tournament was spectacular.
Was it the kind of performance that cemented him as maybe the number two overall pick behind Zion? I mean, did we have we projected him to go that high already?
I think the pro scouts have him in that top five. Now, as you go through the workouts and you start breaking down their skill level, but I just think his overall, when NBA coach or scout looks at him, they look at not where he is now, but how much can his game grow? That was one of the things about Michael Jordan, with him deciding, because he was not a prominent player in high school his first couple years, and one time even being cut after his sophomore season. But when he went to Dean Smith, NBA scouts knew he could grow his game. We knew he had the vertical game, knew he could shoot the basketball at mid-range, but how would all that help in the NBA? I think NBA scouts, when they see him, he is so quick off the dribble, and he's 6'3". He's still very, very young. I guarantee he's got a vertical leap about 44 to 45 inches. So when you can play above the rim, you have range, and now you can see the overall ball handling. Like, he can get a shot anywhere on the court. He's a combination of a couple players that I've seen. I said, like, Latrell Sprewell.
Allen Iverson,
and as far as the way he dribbles the basketball, man, he's going to be a special, special player.
I think what he did yesterday and what he did throughout this season has made this to where, unlike in years when Anthony Davis, everyone's like, oh, my God, can we win the lottery and get Anthony Davis? And if you don't, your consolation prize is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. I think this year at the NBA draft lottery, obviously teams are going to want that number one pick. But if you get the number two pick, I don't think you're going to be disappointed, and I think he's going to be the guy. RJ Barrett's excellent and will make an excellent impact immediately, but this guy's game translates so instantly to the next level. His first step is elite. His vision is elite. His passing is elite. His shooting is not yet close to elite, but it's serviceable. I think he can get to the hoop at the college level at will, and at the NBA level, he will be able to get to the hoop enough to complement.
He can get to the hoop because he can shoot from range.
Right. And so people, we were talking before about, is there a comparison? I hadn't thought of the Iverson one, and the Latrell Sprewell, he brought back old memories with the old two-handed dunk like he had in this game. That's what Sprewell's signature move was. There are some similarities to his game with Trae Young as far as the passing ability, but he is such a better athlete than Trae. Now, Trae's a better shooter, but he is so much quicker than Trae Young. They have similar ball handling skills. I think he's going to be the number two pick of the draft. I think that was as locked in as Zion is to number one. I think by the end of this
tournament, depending where the balls fall, because if someone has a point guard, he might fall to a spot lower than that, but he has the talent, and any other year outside of a Zion year, he would be up for being that first pick.
And it seems like the most impressive traits are the one he already has that he doesn't have to learn. The poise, the confidence, the maturity on the court. Those are stuff that comes as you get older. He seems to already have that. Now he can really just go work on his game.
That's why the moment last night was so big for him. To do it on that stage in the NCAA tournament. And when C says he's young, people need to understand that part of it, and that factors into draft projection as well. He doesn't turn 20 until August. Mm-hmm. So he has the age profile and the growth profile of a one-and-done kid, except he's played 2 years of college basketball. So that adds to his upside on the next level, but he was the star of the tournament.
It also shows you college does work.
Yeah.
You want to work on your game? College does work, no matter where you are. The good coaching, the consistency, the competition, it will help you get to the next level.
All right, the Racers now face number 4, Florida State, tomorrow. In case you missed Ja, you get to see him again. Coming up, is LeBron James uncoachable? That's next on FS1, and you can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We'll get to LeBron James in a second, but first, a couple of big plays last night. Murray State, Marquette, and Ja Morant. Cut into the basket, gets airborne for the big dunk.
One of the things I thought was most impressive was how well Murray State was coached and what kind of sets they ran. Man, they set him up to be a good basketball player. He could play off the ball. Man, he can get up quick.
A two-handed dunk right there with a guy coming is, you mentioned earlier, reminding you of Latrell Sprewell. That was Sprewell's signature dunk right there.
Belmont, Maryland, Jalen Smith getting the dish and explodes for a big jam of his own.
Yeah, Jalen, man, he grabbed that rim like Sprewell grabbed a guy.
Yeah, two hands as well.
Yeah.
This was a great game with a bizarre finish. Belmont's going to be thinking all summer why they held for one shot down one with 20 seconds left. But that was the best game of the day to me.
To the bigs, Jazz, Hawks. Ricky Rubio finds Derek Favors in traffic with the nifty behind-the-back pass.
I had to wait to make sure you told me this was Ricky Rubio. These color jersey schemes and everything had me off. I was saying one team was another team. Nice pass here, Ricky.
The Ricky and Trae Young put on a bit of a show last night. Everyone was watching the kids, but well.
Here we go. Trae, right here, going through the legs, gets past Rubio for the reverse lay-in.
The way the NBA player range shooting has evolved, the only thing that's maybe evolved quicker is the ball handling. The number of guys who are just spectacular ball handlers. And Steph, by the way, got a hand in both those pots. Like, Steph's range shooting and his ball handling have been the standard, Steph and Kyrie, obviously, of the modern NBA. Look at Trae. Spectacular.
All right, let's move on to the Lakers now. Not sure how many more ways we can say that LeBron's first season in L.A. hasn't been a great one. The King about to miss the playoffs for the first time in almost 15 years. Focus has now shifted to who will inevitably replace head coach Luke Walton. Doc Rivers was the latest name to be thrown into and subsequently taken out of the ring. According to reports, Doc was advised against taking the job because apparently LeBron doesn't want to be coached. Nick, you buying this report?
I mean, open season on LeBron has reached a new level. He's now getting blamed for guys not taking a job that wasn't offered to them that we don't know if they ever wanted.
I had a hangnail yesterday. LeBron's fault.
I mean, Doc Rivers is in a place where he is one of the two highest paid coaches in basketball, in an organization that is led by maybe the best executive in basketball, certainly one of the three best executives in basketball, more on that later on, in Jerry West, has great ownership that will never hesitate to spend money, and was under contract. Signed a contract extension with the Clippers 10 months ago in May of 2018. Now, that had an out, and they were talked about. They had been working on, before any of these Lakers rumors started, they had been working on a more long-term ironclad extension, and that got finalized, to me, not that shockingly, the day after these initial Laker rumors leaked. But the idea that LeBron, let's just put it on its head. Would Doc Rivers have ever considered, if he did, considered the Lakers if LeBron wasn't there? If they had struck out on LeBron this past summer, if LeBron had gone to Philly or stayed in Cleveland and was just the young kids, would the Lakers be, are we saying they would be a better job opportunity there? And because LeBron doesn't necessarily, isn't excited about being coached by Luke Walton, that means he doesn't want to be coached? We saw him in Miami initially show resistance to Eric Spoelstra and then do exactly what Spoelstra wanted him to do, not only on the defensive end, but going down on the low block and creating a new part of his game after the first season went so awry in that Dallas series. We saw LeBron get blamed for a player staying in Oklahoma City, Paul George. Now we're seeing LeBron get blamed potentially for a coach staying, this one Doc Rivers with the Clippers.
Well, a number of things here. First of all, Doc Rivers does have a good situation. He is working with someone in Jerry West who also has the job that Doc had. So I do have someone who called me on this situation and said that Doc was looking around. All right. They had taken away, stripped him of some of his title.
Yeah.
All right. He had to trade away his son. That didn't work out there. So there are some things as far as Doc Rivers. Was he looking to go somewhere? Not necessarily looking, but he wasn't 100% happy in Los Angeles with the Clippers.
He was open to it, which is why when he agreed to the extension, he only agreed to it with the opt-out after this season.
Yeah, so to think that Doc potentially might not have looked at Los Angeles as staying there, look, I believe it was on the board. Like, I believe it was on the board from the information that I got. Now, the Clippers did do the right thing as far as coming to an agreement. They hadn't signed it and everything. So the Lakers need a coach. This is the thing with me. As an aging player, great or not great player, how much are you willing to learn? Because this is the thing about LeBron. The NBA has changed about three times since he's been in the league. When he initially came into the league, when they start putting the teams together, the big three teams together, and then now in the three-point and guys being able to dribble the way they do, shooting the corner three, the analytics, the game's changed. So to me, to think that LeBron James, is he not going to keep trying to grow as a basketball person? That's the question I ask. Does he want to learn more basketball? Because even what him and Magic Johnson, the plan they came up with last year, as far as we need more playmakers if you want to be able to win in the playoffs. No, that wasn't accurate. So if LeBron doesn't keep learning, his chances of winning another championship, they're not going to be that way. So people might blame it on, does he want to be coached? You always get to the point where, and my mom taught me this when I was a kid, because she witnessed, I had three older brothers, all of them athletes, all of them went on to play sports, being recruited. She thought I was a little different. And she used to tell me, you think you know more than the coach? And I was like, I do know more than the coach. And she said, the coach is always going to be right, Chris. He's always right. Regardless of what you know, that coach, when you go there, he's going to be right. And I think when you become a star player, which I know something about, it's hard to keep that in the same perspective of, man, this people, they know what's best for me. And LeBron, he hadn't been surrounded by great coaching. The best coaching he got was in Miami with Sproles and Pat Riley. Did he like it? Nope. He did not like it. So it's on the board for me. I would ask them, is LeBron willing to learn different things? Because the NBA is totally different.
Real quick, I disagree with one point you made at the end. He certainly didn't like it in the beginning, and he pushed back in the beginning. And Chris Mannix has talked about his first year there, how he was trying to – Mannix reported that he was trying to get Spoelstra out of the building. But the latter few years, they became incredibly close.
Right. I didn't say that. I said he was very uncomfortable with the great coaching that he was getting there in Miami.
Right. And I think that was at the beginning and not at the end. I think by the end of it, we saw, and I think you noticed this as well, David Fizdale, who was one of the assistants on that Miami team, the embrace he and Fiz had before the Knicks game at the Garden this weekend. Like, he came to appreciate the coaching, actual coaching he got in Miami. I believe he came to appreciate the coaching he got from Ty Lue, which is one of the reasons when Luke Walton's fired, Ty Lue's going to be a guy I think LeBron advocates for. But I do wonder.
He has respect for Ty Lue. I don't know if Ty Lue has the ability to take LeBron to that next level. There's a difference in, I'm going to, because this is what I believe and this is what I teach kids. When you're an athlete, your job is to surrender your ability to whoever is coaching you and allow them to create and mold in you so that you can become your best. It's no different than being a smart student when you're attending a class. You have to be into that class and allowing that teacher to bring out the best in you. And that's what I worry about with LeBron.
Well, and that's certainly one of the reasons the Luke Walton relationship, I don't think it's worked, because I don't think LeBron believes there's anything Luke Walton can teach him. And I don't think that's arrogant. I think that's right. Luke Walton and LeBron are the same draft class.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, in life, I would never want to get to the point where I looked at a person and because they had less experience or whatever, to think I couldn't learn something from that person. What you can learn is if you don't learn nothing else, you learn a different perspective. So you never want to get to the point. I don't care how good. And I've worked with some of the greatest athletes training on and off the field, both of them. From a mental standpoint, you never want to get to that point where you look at a person and say, you know something? I can never learn from him.
Isn't that the most impressive characteristic about Tom Brady that we talk about all the time, that even at this age, he's still coachable, he still wants to learn? And I understand you're putting Bill Belichick up against anyone else that would be in there, but if it isn't Luke Walton, it isn't Doc Rivers, it isn't Ty,
I think LeBron would have really liked to be coached by Doc Rivers. I don't think we can say it isn't Doc Rivers.
Like, well, I said isn't because he's staying with the Clippers.
Right, but those are whether or not LeBron would have enjoyed being coached by Doc Rivers and whether or not Doc Rivers wanted to come to the Lakers. If we want to use the Belichick example, who's the Belichick of the NBA? Greg Popovich. LeBron has spoken at length what respect he has for Popovich. Do I think LeBron?
He was a free agent.
Okay, yes, but do you think he went...
What was more important was him going to Los Angeles and his brand...
Of course.
...compared to going to being coached by someone like Pop.
Right, but you don't think Pop was a negative? As far as if LeBron ever would have considered going to San Antonio, which would have been quite odd, I don't think it was, well, I would go there, but I don't want Pop. The only reason it would ever have been considered was because of Popovich. Like, you're right, he could have said, screw it, the only thing that matters to me is he was making this decision on multi-levels. But I think LeBron, if Greg Popovich were his coach, I think he submits his talents the way Brady does. I want to ask you a question, though, because once you became future Hall of Famer Chris Carter, for the majority of that time, Denny Green was your coach, and you had enormous respect for Denny Green. I don't know the full list of all your different wide receiver coaches, but I imagine at some point in time, you had some coach where you're like, man, I probably know as much, if not more, about this position than you. How did you deal with that relationship? How did you get something out of those relationships when you had been in the league doing it at that level and the guy who was coaching your position maybe wasn't at that level?
Right. I came to work every day with expectation that I was going to learn something. And I also watched the trends in the game because the game was changing. Formations were changing. How they were defending people were changing as the rules were changing, where you couldn't be as physical down the field. So the game is ever evolving, and you never want to feel like as if my brain is going to be stale. LeBron is a savant about basketball. But to think that this is the most he's going to ever know about basketball is negative. I mean, is naive. Like, you have to continue growing. And this year, LeBron, I didn't see the growth in him. And also, as far as Tom Brady, I thought you brought up a great example, because it's not just the Bill Belichick thing. It's what Tom Brady's doing with his body. We saw him 17 years ago at the Combine. So obviously he's learned a lot of information about his body, because his first 10 years, Tom Brady was not into training. He was only into stretching, doing a couple little things. Don't mess with my body. Don't mess with my arm. But since then, someone in Guerrero unlocked a key that now he's into everything he consumes, drinks, and everything. So that's another part of growing as an athlete. How I'm going to take care of my body. That's why I suggest that LeBron needs to lose some weight coming down the stretch. And I just believe right now he's at that crossroads, mentally and physically. You can blame it on the coaching, but is LeBron still going to get better coming down the stretch? That's the part that's important, and you need to bring new concepts, new people into your life to get into your head. That's the way you unlock new things. You want new results? You can't get that. That's the definition of insanity. Doing the same thing over and over and over.
Which is why the Lakers have two major, major decisions this offseason, or pursuits this offseason. One, obviously, is the player or players you're going to surround LeBron with. The other is who the coach is.
The head coach.
Because it has to be someone that can unlock something, or at least immediately garner LeBron's respect and attention. I don't think Luke Walton was ever that guy. And if he was open to the possibility of it, at no point during the season did Luke Walton garner that
position. Jenna, you can't unlock it if the deadbolt's on, though. All right? So LeBron plays a part in that. LeBron's got to open himself up to be coached. So I believe the Luke Walton thing, a lot like you, if you have that in your mindset, this guy don't know more than me, it's just a matter of time before you separate. And that's what we see now in Los Angeles.
All right, let's take a break. Back to college basketball on the other side. Is it championship or bust for Zion and Duke? Next on First Things First. Two division champ Lamont Peterson takes on Sergey Lipinets in a welterweight showdown. It is Sunday, 6 Eastern, only on FS1 and the Fox Sports app. Oh, you know what time it is.
Lamont.
It is time for us to go viral. So last night, the LA Kings beat the San Jose Sharks, and they had a special commentator in the booth. Take a listen.
And we are about to begin the second period. Why don't we take it away, gentlemen, and turn down to the ice.
Yes.
You and I shared a couple of Molsons.
I only had one.
You only had one. Yep. And I had 15.
Go, Kings! Go, Kings, go! Come on, people!
You don't mind if I bite into this burrito right now, do you? Oh, my God.
When does the kiss cam start?
Oh, that's...
I don't know.
You know,
it'd
be something like this. Kopitar with the puck. He dribbles. He skates up the ice. And shot on goal! He scores! Put that baby to bed without a diaper.
Ben, for those of you at home, we've had to stop action on the ice several times. Yeah. Feral cats have run onto the ice.
They killed the penalty! Yes! Just shoot!
Oh, well, they don't have the puck.
It's the first time I've ever been on the kiss cam.
This is one of the greatest nights of my life.
So a couple things. One is, shout out to the LA Kings, because on big sports nights for other sports, forget which night it was, but they had Snoop Dogg in. And they got doing the similar thing. They got a little attention on them. And shout out to Will Ferrell. That Ron Burgundy was 15 years ago.
Yep.
He's still playing the character.
And
he has
so well.
Ron Burgundy's got a podcast.
Yep.
Like, where he plays the character. Talk about something that in real time I didn't think was going to have a lifespan of a couple decades. Anchorman character.
How about
Ron
us
Burgundy.
Getting hockey in the show?
Absolutely. See?
We didn't think we were going to do Sharks.
I'm not
highlights.
Into Ron Burgundy. I'm really not.
I know.
I knew that's
we
why
had
I was
an idea.
Covering.
Okay,
yeah,
I was hoping y'all to speed up. Let's go.
We got you covered.
Not your guy.
All right, let's speed it up. Move along now. Time for your AT&T wake up call. Murray State sophomore John Morant went off for 17 points, 11 rebounds, 16 assists in yesterday's win. It is the first triple-double in the tournament since Draymond Green did it with Michigan State back in 2012. CeCe, how impressive was Ja Morant?
It's impressive what he did to the game. Impact on the game without shooting the ball a whole bunch, his passing, the unselfish ability, but the overall, his ability to be composed at the biggest stage. This is Murray State. We're in the big dance. And, man, for him to know everyone's watching, I might only have one chance at this, that was probably the thing most impressive to me.
And his passing was the best part of the game, but his two biggest plays, the two biggest momentum plays, were two baskets he made. The three right before the half and the dunk that you're seeing right there near the beginning of the second half. 55 points created in this game by Ja Morant, the most by any player in any tournament game in a decade. He was spectacular, and he's turned himself into a lock top three pick.
All right, let's move on to the NFL now. The Colts have reportedly signed four-time Pro Bowl linebacker Justin Houston to a two-year, $24 million deal. Indy plans on using him at D-end this year. See, good fit for the Colts?
Tremendous fit for them. They were one of the teams that had the most amount of money, over $100 million, if not the most, and how they were going to spend it. Last year, they did a great job in free agency by not spending a whole bunch of money, committing dollars. And the way they have Andrew Luck's contract, where he's taking a big salary cap hit this year, they're going to be good not only this year, but into the future. It's a little early for me. It's March, but they might be the favorite in the AFC.
And the ability for them to pluck this player, obviously he was one of the best players on a bad Chiefs defense last year, but it wasn't bad because of him. The Chiefs moved on from him, not because they thought he wasn't a good player, but his salary cap hit was going to be way too much after signing a huge contract a few years ago. 2 years, $24 million, you talked about their cap flexibility, see? They can move on from him after a year and have this cap space right back. I love this move for Indy. He was very good the last half of the season, six sacks in the final half of the year. He's still a very high-level pass rusher in this league.
All right, moving on to a name we haven't said in a while, Dez Bryant, the free agent wide receiver still looking to land on a team. And the 30-year-old wideout thinks he has plenty left to give, saying, quote, I'll be a steal wherever I go. See, you agree with Dez?
Yeah, for the veteran minimum? Absolutely. 30-year-old Dez Bryant, if you can get him to practice and not get hurt, I mean, he knows he can't get any type of contract, $2 million, $3 million, no. So with the type of experience that he has, if he can still play, yes, it would be a steal. But I need to see him working out for a team. I need to be able to see his body weight. I want to see him potentially run a 40, even at 30. I'd like to be able to see how fast he is right now.
A lot of question marks coming off that Achilles injury, being out of football all of last year until he catches on with the Saints and then suffers the Achilles injury. He's going to be more than a year removed from any type of football when he does catch on. I never root for anyone's career to be over prematurely, but if I had to make a bet, my bet would be that Dez Bryant's final game in the NFL was with the Dallas Cowboys.
Young lady told me, I'm a steal. I said, there's a reason why you're free, too. Okay.
All right, well, we're going to move on from that.
Ending
with Michigan State, the two-seed Spartans in a tight battle with Bradley yesterday. And Coach Tom Izzo was seemingly in a tight battle with one of his players. Izzo had to be restrained during a heated confrontation with freshman guard Aaron Henry during a team huddle for his lack of defense. Michigan State got the win, but all questions after the game focused around the fiery exchange.
This is one and done time, you know. The my bads are out the window. If they're my bads because that team played better or that guy played better, if it's my bad because I decided to jog back instead of sprint back, then it is your bad and you're going to hear about it. So that's what it was. I get a kick out of you guys. Get after somebody because you're trying to hold them accountable. I don't know what kind of business you're in, but I'll tell you what, if I was the head of a newspaper and you didn't do your job, you'd be held accountable. That's the way it is.
All right, see, what was your reaction to watching this yesterday?
Well, I'm old school as far as a coaching and what a coach can bring to a young person. This is something as far as college, too, because a lot of times the optics, they don't look good. But I'm going to tell you what, it boils down to a few small things. Coach Izzo made a promise to that kid and his parents. And last night when he was yelling at that kid, I was wondering, if the kid's parents were at the game, how would the kid's parents feel? And you know something? The kid's parents be like, that's what we signed up for. When he sat in our living room, he told us, I'm going to promise you, I'm going to be on your son. I'm going to grow him from a young boy into being a real man, and I'm going to get him his college degree. Those are the things that Coach Izzo promises kids and their family. And that's what Aaron Henry got last night. You don't want to rebound? You don't want to run back on defense? You're going to get chewed out by the coach. And I believe that this coaching will always be effective. I talked to Coach Izzo last night. We went over this. The things he was saying, why he was disappointed. And he just believes in society, people are just getting soft. They don't want to be pushed. They don't want to be driven. And there's a certain standard in every business. And in his business, he set the standard. He is one of the icons that we have coaching. And if I had a kid who can play basketball, he could play for Coach Izzo.
So I've evolved on this over the years because I used to instantly hate it on the college level because it felt to me like there was such a departure in power between the millionaire employed coach and the teenage or young 20s college athlete. And then I got to know a coach named Frank Martin who coached the University of South Carolina. And I know how his players talk about him, the relationships that he has with them long-term throughout their entire lives. And he is a yeller and a screamer. And Frank's gotten in trouble in the past for being a guy who might tap you on your chest a bit. And then through Chris, I got to know Coach Izzo a little bit. Not the way Chris does, but a little bit. And the way his players swear by him post-graduation. And graduation's important now because he graduates as many of his players as anybody in college basketball. And the other element of yesterday that I think makes this where you have to evaluate it individually is you saw that the other players on the team felt licensed to grab Coach Izzo. Some of these coaches, when they are losing their mind, that don't have the relationship with the players, nobody can go near them. Other coaches can't go near them, much less one of the players. Cassius Winston grabs him and pushes him down. Another player grabs him and brings him back. Cassius said after the game that he talked to Coach Izzo and said, let me talk to Aaron. I think I can get the message across. And so I can't sit here and say Tom Izzo is a bad guy because of this. His players adore him. And Chris's point that they know what they signed up for, he'd been doing this on national television for 25 years. They know this is the style of coaching they're going to get. Now, after the game, could he have said, and if he was asking my counsel, which he's not, listen.
He's not. I
understood, but what my counsel would have been, something along the lines of, hey, Aaron was making a mistake. It's a very big game. I needed him to understand what I needed him to do. Could I have done it a little differently? I could have. But I don't think he thinks he wanted to do it differently. I think he thinks this is exactly the way that young man needs to be coached. And since you have a list.
Yeah, how do you prepare for the show?
What do you mean, how do I prepare for the show?
You have a style.
I have a style.
It's
absolutely.
Yours.
Correct.
Okay.
It does not mean it's for everyone else, is your point.
Abso-freaking-lutely. And there's no way we can prepare someone else, but you're being truly to yourself.
100%.
That's who Coach Izzo is. Like, people don't want people to be themselves. They're like, oh, man, I want you to be the best you until it involves something strenuous. Now, most people don't want to be coached, even in this business. The people who run this, they know they can coach me. They can tell me anything, and I'll try to make instant improvement. But that is not the way with normal people. People don't want change. They don't want to be corrected, and they don't want to be pushed. They want to go at their own speed. But sometimes, to be able to get the wine out the grape, you have to sometimes be able to yell at them to be able to get them to that
but
spot.
But they're also, just real quick, I'm sorry, Jenna, but there also has to be the flip side to it, which there has to be the belief from the player, this man cares about me and is invested in me as a person and a basketball player.
Michigan State is one of the top 10 programs in the country. These kids were not forced to go there. They had other choices. If they wanted it easy, there's easy places to go. And we know who they are. We know who the coaches are. We know the ones who coddle the players. If that's what you want, then there's a place to sign up for it. But if you come into Michigan State, that's what you're going to be getting, and you don't have to apologize after it either, because that's who Coach is.
Right. Well, to your point, Aaron Henry did say afterwards, I get it. I've seen worse from him in practice. It actually isn't, it isn't that huge of a deal, and he understood it, and the criticism was twofold. What you said, the fact that he doubled down on it afterwards and that it actually happened in of itself. And you just wonder if you think players are looking for a different style of coaching, where that well, is even effective with today's players, they get ready to go to the
NBA. It's still effective. The most successful coaches we have, Bill Belichick. Style what? Just like that. College football, the greatest of all great. Who is it? Nick Saban. Style what? Just like that. Coach Izzo wish he was coaching football because they allow football coaches to get away with it more than that. And he also talked about spring football.
Right. Man, already, and before I let you go, you know, I'm getting excited for football.
But the point that I was making there at the end, and I think it needs to be heard, is that it only works, I think, long term if your players believe you are invested in them. We've seen a lot of college coaches that are this style of coaches that burn out or flame out or don't last.
I always think in athletics, this will always have a spot. If you are coaching the fundamentals, if you are a verbal, if you are a chastised player, it will always work in sports because it's not like your normal job. It's sports. Kids get used to it. From a small age, they get used to it. How they're doing their job is in a different environment. How it's communicated is very different. It will always be effective. Hats off to Coach Izzo.
All right, and Lupe, the most anticipated NCAA tournament debut has to be that of Zion Williamson. Best player on the best team, number one overall seed, Duke getting ready to take on North Dakota State tonight. The task is a tall one for any 16 seed. You add Zion to the mix, it is all but impossible. At 6'7", 285, the projected number one overall pick is ready to go. See, what are you most excited to see from Zion as he gets ready for the tournament?
Well, I'm excited to see him get out in transition. I mean, he's a tremendous defender, and he can generate his own offense by either getting it off the glass or by defending at a high level. Coach K doesn't have to run a set play for him. You don't have to worry about that. So for me, it's the other things off the ball. Offensively, he's still got some challenges. He doesn't have a mid-range game. Can't do anything with his right hand except dunk it. You know, doesn't dribble to his right too often. So for me, it's the other things that he'll do. And what makes him going to be the number one player is his overall athleticism. So out in the open court, in a tournament like this, that's what I want to see.
Well, listen, tonight's game is going to be, you mentioned Alabama when we were talking to Coach Izzo, it's going to be an Alabama Citadel game where it's just one team's overwhelming athleticism, power, size, and strength. So tonight's game is almost is not what I'm looking forward
so you're
to.
Aside counting North from North Dakota State out,
I am, Jenna. They're not going to be this year's UMBC.
And
I don't think I'm the only person counting North Dakota State out. He's going to have amazing. Carson Wentz ain't walking through that door for them this game. He's going to have amazing highlights in tonight's game. But set that aside. What I'm looking forward to for him in the tournament is how will he react late in close games? Will he defer to RJ Barrett the way he has most of the season and the way it seems like the team has been set up for him to do? Or will he demand the ball late? If it is close late and the other Duke's got a 4-point lead with a minute left and the other team's trying to foul, is he comfortable going to the free throw line? Is he comfortable in that spot? And I've got circled on my bracket already, if we get it, speaking of Coach Izzo, a Michigan State Duke Elite Eight game when you are up against a team with that caliber of coaching that I'm certain there's someone on the Michigan State staff already that is putting together the game plan. How does he react to great coaching, a great team built around slowing him down? Because we know this. Duke, when Zion plays a full game, is 26-2. The two losses are an overtime loss to Syracuse and a 2-point loss to Gonzaga. They're 3-3 in games he doesn't play or he got hurt at the very beginning of. If you can neutralize Zion, Duke can get got. So that's going to be every team's number one objective going into this tournament. How does he react to that? And how does he react to this level of pressure? Because this is different than the ACC tournament. It's certainly different than regular season college basketball games where no one loss really hurts you that badly. All of that is what I'm excited to see as far as projecting him on the next level.
Does he have anything left to prove to people, though? I know there's things he can improve on, but does he have anything left to prove as he gets ready to start?
I mean, we're getting to a society where, no, he shouldn't do anything. But to me, every time he goes out there, he's gotten better. Every game since he's been back from the injury, he's gotten better. No, his game is not evolved. He is not a strong offensive player. Like, he does not have a mid-range. He has a set 3-point shot. Yes, so every time he's on the court against higher-level competition, he should improve at this stage.
And I don't think those types of improvements, like, is he all of a sudden going to change the type of player he's been? Not during this tournament. Those are over the next few years. Those are once he gets to an NBA team, once they start working with him in the offseason. But how does he respond to these moments? There's a reason that we've talked about it before, that guys that went to college, a lot of them had those great tournament moments, whether it's Steph, whether it's D-Wade's triple-double, whether it's Carmelo's entire tournament. Though, I think Zion is that caliber of player, and we know he's on a good enough team.
Right.
So how will he respond in those moments after tonight? Tonight will just be a showcase for how athletic and fun Duke can be. But starting in round two, anybody can be beaten. Those 8-9 matchups are real matchups. That's what I'm excited for.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, is LeBron James uncoachable? That's ahead on First Things First. Back here, first things first, joined now by former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott. Good morning, Bart.
That was an interesting segment, last segment about Izzo. You know, I'm from Detroit, you know, so I know about him. And I had a coach try to do that once. Didn't work out so well for him. He's about to get them paws put on him. I'm a grown man. Listen, when you start getting into my personal space and poking your fingers and all that, grab my helmet stuff.
That's it.
It's easier in high school, but in college, I'm a grown man. So if you can whoop me, then you put your paws on me. But if you better respect my space. You can yell all you want, but all that touching stuff is over. They got some paws put on him. Night.
Who coached you in college, Bart?
Oh, you want me to call his name? I was about to get put to sleep. Where the camera at? Michael Vitt. And he knows if I see him in the streets today, it's going to be a rematch.
We all have one guy like that. Yeah, I'll throw mine out. Mine was Jeff Gray.
But stop using full names.
He did?
No. That guy's a coach.
Look him up.
He wasn't a good guy.
Google him.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Hey, smack him in his neck.
Now I'm stressed out, Nick. Here we go. Another year, another Aaron Rodgers weapon leaving Green Bay. Last year, it was Jordy Nelson heading to Oakland. This year, it's Randall Cobb going to Dallas. As far as Cobb goes, after 8 seasons together, the two became good friends, and it's hard saying goodbye to your good friends. Rodgers echoing my thoughts on his Instagram last night. He said, I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged, and when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. Still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty that they're gone. I guess I just miss my friend.
Old Shawshank line.
Bart, what do you make of everything the Packers have done this offseason?
Well, I think they're starting to recognize that Aaron Rodgers, even though he is the best quarterback in the league, mobile, he's like a blend of a mobile quarterback and a pocket quarterback, they have to get him more protection. And, you know, so letting Cobb go, he hadn't had 70 receptions in the last couple of seasons. You have to go out and get a cheaper version. They have 2 first-round draft picks. He wasn't healthy much of the last season, and the year before that broke the collarbone. So now they have to start running the ball with Aaron Jones more, protecting him and playing stout defense where he doesn't have to carry the team and do everything. So they go out and they get Za'Darius Smith, they go out and get Preston Smith, try and get Mike Pettine some weapons so that they can win ugly games. So you only need Aaron Rodgers to win you maybe 2 or 3 games where he has to be special, where he has to try and go throw for throw, play for play against maybe a Tom Brady or one of these upper echelon types.
As opposed to the last couple years where you were asking him to go in at the end and win almost every game.
Right, because you look at their defense was 22nd overall. That's not good enough. So if you get that defense down to maybe top 10, maybe 12, 13, then that's asking him less. Then you can win by running the football and throwing the ball. You see this happen with Drew Brees, you know, trying to win ugly. And you see that that's how they're trying to support older quarterbacks now, because he is still a bad man, but you know that clock is ticking and he's really truly your franchise and he hasn't been healthy the last couple of seasons.
And Liz, you mentioned the couple of first round draft picks. I wouldn't be surprised on if they spend one of those first round draft picks on a wide receiver. There's the kid Akeem Butler, who is going to be, I think, at the very least, an excellent red zone threat in the league. There are other guys that you could get. DK Metcalf, who is a combine freak. I don't know how he's going to translate to the NFL level, but regardless, they're going to have options there with one of those 2 picks. But the idea that we know that the Packers have been just a disaster when Aaron Rodgers has missed any time. And what they're trying to do is not build a team that is okay without him, but a team that when he's out there, they can win through, like you mentioned, their defense. That is maybe more situated for the division they're in and the weather in that division that they're in. When they're going to have to go through the Bears. You don't have to beat the Bears in a shootout, right? But can your defense – I thought the Za'Darius Smith pickup was an excellent one. Preston Smith, I wasn't as high on as that one, but they are. That is where they're spending their money. And Randall Cobb had an awesome first game of the year last year. And they didn't have a single game but more than 45 yards. I liked the pickup for Dallas because of the upgrade over Cole Beasley. Right. But for the Packers to save the money there, I understand it. He still has his number one receiver, Davante Adams. We'll see what else they add. Equanimeous St. Brown was coming into his own a bit at the end of last year. They spent a bunch of mid and late round picks on wide receivers the last few years. Like, that's the plan for the Packers moving forward, is to not have it be entirely reliant on Aaron Rodgers' right arm.
Once the Packers decided a couple years ago to invest in Davante Adams, things changed as far as the receiving core. Jordy Nelson injured. They came off him last year. He ended up in Oakland this year. Cobb, they had to get off of him. Yeah. He's not one of the premier guys for the number they were paying. So as far as him and Clay being able to move on, like, these were guys that were not performing at the salary that they were getting. So the Packers are doing the right things. They're starting to invest in their defense. They got to start having some balance.
Two corners last year and, drafted.
Yes, and this is one of the few off seasons they have actually participated in free agency. So they're actually, this is one of the richest franchises because the way it's run, the revenue streams and everything, tremendous. But they don't spend money in free agency. So I believe that now you can start to see some changes in the front office. And also, from an offensive standpoint, the reason why they hired Matt LaFleur was for him to create some of this offense with Aaron Rodgers. So you guys might be saying, yeah, they might draft some wide receivers. Young wide receivers do not do well with Aaron Rodgers. Just check the record. They do not do well. So depending on a guy in the first round, the second round, that he's going to come in and catch 80 balls or something like that, that's not what I'm depending on. What I'm depending on is the young offensive mind. He's going to bring out the best in Aaron Rodgers. Devontae Adams, I believe, will have the best year of his career. We're going to play some better defense because we need to be able to face up to these divisional opponents and the weather that we'll be facing. They're probably looking at maybe Chicago might be the team to beat.
Yeah.
So we need a more stout defense to be able to beat the Chicagos and the Minnesotas.
Well, and the other, when you mentioned the draft, last year in the draft, corners in the first two picks. Mm-hmm. And the year before, they took a safety and a corner, pardon me, both with two second-round picks. The year prior to that, they spent a first-round pick on Kenny Clark. Now they've spent two big free agent signings on defense. Yeah. Like, that, they've spent draft capital and free agent capital on defense. So whatever they do with those first-round picks, whether it's wide receiver or not, I would expect
For me, I think it's offensive lineman, maybe Juwan Taylor, because you have to protect him because he's been on the run, he's been injured, so mm-hmm. now you have to protect him. Then you maybe get the receiver with the 30th pick, whichever one, somebody's going to fall.
So if you're a Packers fan looking forward to this season, tell me where you think the Packers could be. How much more work do they have to do to get themselves in a good position in that division?
Well, they only have $15 million left on their cap space. They spent tremendous on Za'Darius Smith, who's a guy who really people don't know. He played for the Ravens, and mm-hmm. he had 10 sacks, but he was splitting time with T-Sizzle. You know, he's a guy that's ready to really emerge. You know, they tried to trade for him a couple of times. Now they finally got him, Mike Patton. They've been making that transition to a 3-4. So mm-hmm. now they have the lockdown corners. Now they have their bookend. Not one, they have two bookend type of pass rushers.
Yep.
You know, Preston Smith wasn't bought in for, I believe, his pass rushing ability. He was bought in to pretty much be Adelius Thomas, right? And Za'Darius Smith is going to play the Terrell Suggs mode, meaning that he's going to be the guy that primarily rushes all the time.
Yes.
And Preston Smith is going to be the one who drops in coverage, blitzes, because he's more of a blitzer. So now Patton has the weapons that he needs because he needs to be aggressive. But if you don't have the pass rushers, you put those corners on the island. And it's rare that you find a Revis, a Chris McAllister, a Samari Rowe, which what Mike Patton is used to working with. He's trying to develop that.
And I think they believe their offense is going to get instantly better by having Matt Ford there. That's why they hired him. And by having Aaron Rodgers be healthy. Aaron Rodgers got hurt in the first game of the year last year and, to me, looked like he was dealing with it throughout the season. Mm-hmm. And then the other element is what ruined the Packers last year? The inability to win on the road. If you remember last year, Rodgers talked about it after they got that comeback win, I think, over San Francisco. He said, man, we've got a tough stretch coming up. It's going to define our season. Does this defense put them in better position to travel and to win on the road?
Last thing, Jenna, he could have had some of his old buddies on the team, but Aaron Rodgers demanded being the highest paid. He didn't do like Tom Brady. He can keep some of them guys around, and you don't have to get on Instagram begging and crying and everything. But trying to be the highest paid, that's what it will get you.
Bar, we'll see you later in the show.
Get out the car, Vite. This is the rematch. That's a movie quote for you.
Coming up, can John Morant pass Zion for the number one pick? Next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we're joined by former NBA champ Steven Jackson, who always has a lot to say about a lot of different topics.
Love you out of death.
We're going to stick to basketball, though, for this.
I couldn't do dinner last night, man. I had some. You know what?
But you're real when you called and said you couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Most people don't do that.
Mama wanted to go early, so she's my priority.
And she runs the show.
Heck, I cancel plans all the time. You have respect for that?
Hey,
I love that.
You could have came, Jenna, anytime.
That's great. The most anticipated NCAA tournament debut has to be that of Zion Williamson, best player on the best team at 6'7", 285. The projected number one overall pick is ready to go. Steven Jackson, how does Zion's game translate to the NBA? When you look at a player like this, the athlete that he is.
Body-wise, athleticism-wise, he's ready. He has a lot of work to do on his game. The kid is an athlete. Right now, he's just jumping over everybody. He's stronger than everybody. So he's going to dominate. But when he gets to the NBA, everybody on the court's that size. Everybody on the court's that strong. Everybody's an athlete in the NBA. So it's going to be a different, but he's still going to be a dominant NBA player because of his ability at that age. He's going to continue to grow, and his confidence. I think the biggest thing about him, he has the confidence of a number one pick, of a guy that's going to succeed in the NBA, and that's what you need. A lot of guys come in the NBA that get drafted high, but they don't have the confidence. They really don't believe in themselves. With this kid, he has the confidence, and I think he's going to do great in the NBA.
Steven, you remember when Blake Griffin came into the league?
Mm-hmm.
Game was not refined.
Right.
Didn't have a jump shot at all. He was an athlete. Now, he's taller than Zion, about 3, maybe almost 4 inches taller than Zion, and he was considered strong by NBA standards as a rookie. He's not as big as Zion. Blake's first year gave you 23-12. Mm-hmm. I think Zion's already a better defensive player than Blake was when he first came into the league. He might not be as instantly dominant offensively because the size does matter. He is, you said there's going to be everyone in the NBA is his strength. I disagree with you on that. I think the moment he walks into the NBA, he's going to be top 5 percentile of strength. But the height is going to be a big difference now. 6'7 is plenty tall for a college player. For an NBA player, he's going to be undersized for the position that he's playing, certainly until he learns to shoot. Mm-hmm. But his ability to play weak side defense and his ability to dominate you in transition, if he's on a team that plays at a fast pace with even a halfway decent coach, I think he can be a guy that walks in the league and gives you 20 a game. I think, and won't be a liability defensively. And you know this, one thing that gets overrated when people come into the league is the way rookies get exploited on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Almost every rookie that comes in is not even an average defender. They're bad defenders. Right. He's going to have that going for him in the positive
and
direction.
Most of the time, the reason why they're poor defensive is about heart. It's about attitude. But then they don't have the size. So he's not going to have to worry about that. He's a willing defender right now. Because I watched Ja play last night. He's going to have to get better on the defensive end.
Yeah.
I mean, he was giving the dude 8 feet. Like, he was like, hey, you out there. Like, because that's – it's not really beat into them. I think Zion, that's one of the things where he can make an instant impact. The one thing I would be aware of, because to me, he's a tweener player. He's between a person like Gilchrist, who came out of Kentucky, didn't have an offensive shot.
Still
wait
don't.
1 second. Yeah. And still doesn't.
Still don't.
And Blake Griffin. But the thing about Blake, when Blake was at this time in college, he was a better offensive player than Zion, by far. Like, he could do more things offensively than Zion. Now, Zion was a better athlete. Then Blake had a year off. He had that red shirt year.
And that certainly helped him.
So those numbers you're talking about, 23 and what?
23 12. And 12. I don't think he would have done that if it would have been his true rookie.
And we shouldn't expect that from Zion. Because I can guarantee he won't get 23 and 12.
And the 12 rebounds, to me, is going to be the way harder number. I think he's going to be 20-some points as a rookie, especially because he's on a team that's going to need it. But the 12 rebounds, that's what differentiated Blake's rookie year was. You don't see rookies that aren't true centers. DeAndre Ayton's doing something similar, but he's playing the five at all times.
But the thing with Zion is, look how much he's improved the last 2 months of playing basketball. So he will continue to get better. He's got to add some ball handling. Because you look at NBA on the offensive end, man, it's about ball handling, being able to get to a spot, and being able to shoot. Those are the two skill sets that I have seen over the last 20 years. The athletes today, they're not better. But let me tell you something. They got more skill. They can handle it better, and they can show enough shoot the rock better than any other time in modern basketball.
Yeah, he definitely has to work on his shot. But then again, I'm going to say some of the stuff that you said about LeBron. He got to drop some weight. He got to drop a little weight. That's not going to work for him. If you've seen even with Boogie. Boogie didn't slim down. Guys like that, especially in the NBA with the game changing, when you got five and four men out there shooting threes and taking it off the dribble, you have to be able to guard that. And I think he's going to have a problem with that when he first gets in the league, but he's definitely a pro.
So tell me why. Do you think he has to drop weight because you think it can lead to injury, or you think he needs to drop weight because you think it'll make him more explosive? It feels to me like the reason he's such a one-of-one athlete that I've ever seen is that size with that explosion.
Remember, this is college. He's going to be in the NBA next year. It's a whole different ball game. And guys are faster. Guys his size are faster. Guys his size are probably just more athletic than him. So it's going to be a culture shock to him because the talent he's playing against
is different. When you're that young, you don't know your true fight weight. I know when Larry Fitzgerald, man, he was huge. He was like, Uncle Chris, man, I think I'm going to be bigger than you. So it's like, man, you can't gauge it off of me. I remember working with Vince Carter when he was a young player and other athletes. That ideal fight weight, when you are young, man, you want it to be as little as possible. Man, Charles Barkley made a huge mistake early in his career trying to play like that with all the weight through his midsection and through his legs. He's got a different type of body. So Jack is on it as far as, Man, he's probably eating all kinds of fast food and stuff. Yeah. Now, when you start, if you're going to be a multi-million dollar player, all that's going to change. He could tighten that up, and it would make him more explosive.
So let's talk about another player who's probably going to get ready and have to change his game or maybe his body a little bit for the NBA, and that's Ja Morant. I don't know if you got a chance to see what he did last night. Yesterday was just spectacular. How NBA ready do you think he is?
You know, like you said, just all his body. He has the same mold as Russ. Same athleticism, they're the same height.
Ooh. Okay, you said something there.
Oh, yeah, they do the exact same thing. When you have a point guard that has that motor, that's athletic, and that size, he can be a Russ Westbrook, and he's showing you that. How many guys have had triple-doubles? Four guys have triple-doubles in the tournament. So, he's one of them doing it last night, so it's special.
Well, listen, we were talking about this in the early morning meeting about the Russ Westbrook comparison. I don't think Ja's quite the athlete Russ is, because Russ, even by NBA standards, there was a three-year period where I think he was the best raw athlete in the league. Ja's an elite athlete, not that. But I think Ja's got better court vision than Russ. I think Ja's a better – Russ is a good passer. I think Ja will be an elite passer at the next level.
Both of them – triple-double in the league, you're an elite passer.
Well, he's a willing passer. What I'm seeing for Ja Morant averaging 10 assists per game in college when no one else is even averaging 8, that to me that's on the level
that's
of
special.
It's absolutely special.
It's also how Murray State runs their offense. It's kind of set up. If
through
he was
him.
A good.
Now,
he's a gifted passer, but it's set up the way that they run those sets and everything is for him to generate. But Russ, at this stage, Ja is a better scorer.
Yes.
Now, his athleticism. I'm like Jack, man. He matches it as far as Russ, because he can do some things that Russ couldn't do at this age. Both of them late bloomers, too. Russ not recruited highly, and he hit that growth spurt later where he started to fill into his body. But that jump shot, man, Russ can't outshoot him now.
Nah.
Agree. No, that's what the only thing, and we can disagree on we're talking about 98th percentile athleticism, 94th. It's in the margins. The part that is so exciting about Ja Morant is that first step. That first step combined with being an adequate shooter. He's not a great shooter yet, but he's an adequate shooter. And that court vision, now you're talking a very, very special player. And so I think he didn't need to do much to make himself a lock top 5 pick. I think he asserted himself last night as he's going to be the first player taken after Zion. And whoever, when they get to the draft lottery and there's two teams left, it's not going to be this, you mentioned Michael Gilchrist earlier. That was a huge bummer.
What?
When it was Anthony Davis, someone's getting Anthony Davis, someone's going to get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, and it's like, you got to be kidding me. That won't happen in this year's draft. Even as much as people want Zion, whoever, the consolation prize being Ja Morant is one hell of a consolation prize.
You draft a guy like Gilchrist, you need to look at your people, your scouts, and see who's picking the players for your team. That's horrible. but this kid here, I think a lot of teams are looking at him, not only his game, but his basketball IQ. How many kids in college basketball have an IQ like this kid? And that's why he can make so much stuff happen on the court.
Good point.
Because
he's
thinking ahead of the game.
Mm-hmm.
His mind is already in the NBA.
All right, we got to take a break. Steven, we'll see you later in the show. Coming up, what made Tom Izzo so upset at the tournament? Hear from him next on First Things First.
Right.
On Sunday, the Monster Energy Series moves over to FS1 as NASCAR's finest battle in Martinsville. Catch the pre-race at 12:30 Eastern with the race starting at 2. It's all on FS1 and on the Fox Sports app. Back here with Steven Jackson. We'll get to Coach Izzo in a second, but first, Belmont, Maryland, Jalen Smith gets the dish, explodes for the Monster Jam.
This was the best game of the day to me. A very bizarre ending with Belmont holding for the final shot. I thought, man, they had every chance to win this game. Maryland survives in advance, and this kid was great late. They had no answer for him. They had no answer for Maryland's size down low.
That's what you call a finish.
Mavericks and Kings, De'Aaron Fox gets the steal, brings the house down with that right there.
Man, he's so special.
Yeah.
Man, he needs to be playing in another city. Watch out for Sacramento next year, though. They tried to scare some people this year. Good young group of young players.
And that's another guy whose game, Ja Morant has a little, reminds you of a little bit. The explosiveness, the willingness to pass, the athleticism.
The hair.
Yeah, De'Aaron's got a better body than him.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
All right, Pistons and Suns. De'Anthony Melton driving baseline, throwing down a vicious dunk.
Steven, what's up with this defense, man?
This is the last 10 games of the season. This is the dirt bowl.
Well, what's
everybody
going on?
That's trying out playing right now. This is called garbage minutes.
I mean, that's my guy Thon McCurry. He's supposed to be out there for his defense. Just give him baseline, then let him get to the cup.
Nobody played D.
Man, we got somebody on our staff that part of the ownership in Phoenix or something, because they stay in the losing column, but they stay on our highlight.
Yeah, you know how
for
that
some
go.
Reason.
You know how that go.
All right, moving on to Michigan State now. The two-seed Spartans were in a tight battle with Bradley yesterday. Coach Tom Izzo was seemingly in a tight battle with one of his players. Izzo had to be restrained during a heated confrontation with freshman guard Aaron Henry during a team huddle for his lack of defense. Michigan State got the win, but all questions after the game were focused around the fiery exchange.
This is one and done time, you know. The my bads are out the window. If they're my bads because that team played better or that guy played better, if it's my bad because I decided to jog back instead of sprint back, then it is your bad and you're going to hear about it. So that's what it was. I get a kick out of you guys. Get after somebody because you're trying to hold them accountable. I don't know what kind of business you're in, but I'll tell you what, if I was the head of a newspaper and you didn't do your job, you'd be held accountable. That's the way it is.
All right, Stephen, what was your reaction to this?
I love it. I love it. I mean, I love coaches like that. It's too many coaches these days that let players get away with murder, especially on defense. And I see it a lot in the NBA. You know, a lot of guys don't even attempt to play defense, and the coaches don't say nothing. So when I see a coach like Coach Izzo that hold guys accountable and let him know, look, two things I shouldn't have to get on you on: effort and playing defense. And defense, it's really effort. You can teach it, but you have to go out there and want to stop your man. And I see that a lot in the NBA where guys just let their man score. Guys don't even help their man. LeBron has been doing it sometimes. James do it sometimes. Yeah, I would call all these big players because a lot of them don't play both ways. I salute guys like Kawhi. I salute guys like Paul George, Russ that play both ways. Defense is not respected like it used to. And when I love coaches like that get on guys and don't let nothing slide because they take away from the game.
Steven, I know the answer to this, but who's the best coach you ever played for?
Greg Popovich.
How was Popovich with his best? And I know Aaron Henry's his freshman, so not his best player, obviously. Cassius Winston is. But how was Popovich's style with a guy like Tim Duncan?
Well, and that's the thing about it. The same way he treats the worst player on the team or the last player to get in the game, he treats Tim Duncan the same way. It's been many a times where I've seen Pop look at me, and he's trying to get to me, but he go at Tim to get to me because at times I couldn't take it. I was shut down. You know, and Pop knew that. And once I realized that he can go at the best player and Tim can take it, how can I not? And that's great coaching. And that's the reason why I became a professional 14 years, because I was in that situation early in my career.
And if you look at the best coaches at all levels, being Pop, being Nick Saban, college football, Bill Belichick in pro football, they're the best in the business. Mm-hmm. And they all have a relatively same coaching style. Jack comes up with a story about Tim Duncan. Man, there's people that sat here talk about Tom Brady in New England. Coach Belichick, he puts on 15 to 20 plays after a game, and Brady is one of the first ones that he goes to ripping. Those are my favorite coaches. Now, every athlete has a different style. My brother played for Bobby Knight, was a captain for Bobby Knight. But Bobby Knight sat in my living room. I got a scholarship offer from every Big Ten school. Michigan State offered me a scholarship. Michigan offered me. Illinois, all those schools. Almost every school in the Midwest I could have gone to play basketball. But my mom knew at an early age. She said, Bobby, you can't. She didn't even let me talk to Bobby. She said, Bobby, he won't be able to handle it. He's not made of the same stuff my other. Now, he's a better athlete, but he won't take what you say to him. When you try to use profanity or something and you come at him, he will come back at you and you and him will be fighting. So it's also the athlete. You have to know what type of blood type you need. I could play for Nick Saban. I could play for Belichick because they're teaching the game at its highest level. And I know with my athletic ability, if I learn at the highest level, it's going to give me the greatest opportunity for success. So I believe in that type of coaching. And the thing about Aaron Henry that's important is, no, he's not the best player, but he is a freshman. And if I'm going to run this program the way this program is going to be run, I'm going to make sure that the freshmen know how it's going to go down. And after the game, I guarantee you his parents, that being Aaron Henry, they said, you know something, I'm fine with Coach Izzo. Why? Because when he sat in our living room, he made two promises, that he would grow my young boy up and to be a man, and he would help him graduate. And those are the types of moments that really help you grow up in both aspects.
And you also see right there in those clips, the other players, the older players, have the license with Coach Izzo if they think this could escalate to a place where it's not productive to grab him, be like, hold on, let me talk to him. When Izzo got back up and was really upset in the huddle, you had Cassius Winston again be like, hold on, calm him down a bit. I think it's very different collegiate and pro. I think pro coaches is grown men, almost everybody's rich. The power dynamic isn't as skewed. Mm-hmm. I feel differently at the college level. In order for this to not make me squeamish.
How can the college player and the coach be on the same level, though?
No, that's my point. That's exactly what I was saying, is that on the college level, there is such a discrepancy between the player and coach, the power, the influence, all of it. That's the exact point I'm making, is because there is such a discrepancy in what, as a professional player, you have some recourse to a degree if you think your coach has gotten out of line. As a college player, you have no power over the scholarship. You have so little power that it is the type of coaching that if I am not convinced the coach is invested in these players long-term, invested in them graduating, and not just invested in them 5 months a year while they're playing for their team, I don't like it. But I know what Tom Izzo's reputation is.
Yeah, but to me, it's no different. Go ahead.
I know what Tom Izzo's reputation is, and I know that when people sign up to play for Michigan State, when kids get recruited by Tom Izzo, when the parents entrust Tom Izzo with their kids, they know this is part of it. But they also know Tom Izzo is going to be a part of their life long after they're done playing in the NCAA tournament. So we see that same thing with Coach K. You didn't mention Coach K is one of the great coaches that does this, but Coach K is as crazy as any of them on the sidelines. But you have these real investments in the players. It's the coaches that treat the players as if they're hired guns. And once they're out of the program, they're out of their lives, that talk to them like this, that I don't like. But that's not who Tom Izzo is. And this shouldn't be a surprise. This is how Tom Izzo been coaching Michigan State, not just in the tournament, but all year long from October till March. Every year he's been the head coach.
To me, it's no different than a person going to a school of higher learning. If you major in engineering, math, or whatever your specialty is, when that student sits down, that professor's job is to bring out the best and try to get that information to that student. So for me, it's not about athletics. It's about talented people trying to get better. You need those who have experienced where you're going to be able to speak into your life, to be able to push you. Because most of the time, young people, they don't know where they need to go. So you need a voice out there to be able to make sure that you're able to get there. So for me, this is not about athletics. It's not about power dynamics. It's about trying to be the best person I can be and turning over my talent, my intellect, to someone who I feel like is more seasoned and more responsible than me.
Are all the college coaches, for the most part, do they lean towards this style of coaching? Because we've sat here with Jay Wright, who doesn't appear to be that kind of coach, who seems
to... And he's very effective.
Seems to be effective.
This isn't the only way to do it.
And sticks around for a long time.
Okay, let me tell you, Jay Wright is the same coach. I watched Jay Wright last week in the Big East. He chewed out the water boy, the scorekeeper, every referee. He coaches the same way. He just looks totally different. Jay Wright coaches exactly like Coach Izzo coaches.
Well, and then too, it's easy to respect that and take that from a coach when you know he cares about you just as much off the court as on the court. Like Pop, perfect example, when Pop came to me, this is two things he told me. I know that you like to smoke. You can't smoke. You have to play defense. You'll have a long career in this league. I started playing defense when I got to San Antonio, won me a championship. All great fatherly advice. Yes. But no coaches ever came to me like that. That
man
clear.
To man and
that
been clear. Very clear about
that. That clear. And once I knew that he cared about me as a man first, it was easy for me to take anything from him. It was easy for me to go out there and die for him on the court because I know he honestly cares about me.
And the other thing with the Spurs is, and this is still legendary to this day, when they're in the playoffs and they have a team dinner, that team dinner includes guys who hadn't played there for 10 years.
Oh, no question.
You could call Greg Popovich this morning. I'm certain of it.
Yes.
So that long-term investment in relationship is what allows some of the license. Because I know you, Steven. Mm-hmm. You don't let a lot of people talk to you a lot of different
ways. And I wouldn't
have
made it 14 years if I wasn't coachable.
Right.
All right, Steven, we'll see you later on in the show. Coming up, have the Green Bay Packers done enough to keep Aaron Rodgers happy? Talk about that on First Things First. Back here, First Things First, we are going viral. Yesterday, John Morant balled out, showed why he's going to be one of the top draft picks in the NBA draft. So, of course, people chimed in on Twitter. D. Wade tweeted out, congrats to Murray State and much respect to John Morant on joining the triple-double family in the tournament. NFL MVP Patty Mahomes said, yo, this man John Morant can hoop. And Kendrick
Good job,
Perkins,
Patrick.
Kendrick Perkins
Wake up.
Tweeted,
Kansas City just got cable.
If I'm an NBA general manager and I have the number two pick, I'm taking Ja Morant hands down. He is NBA ready right now. Kid is special.
Kendrick Perkins is absolutely right. Dwayne Wade obviously famously had a triple-double himself at Marquette, the school that Murray State beat in the tournament yesterday. This list of triple-doubles, if you go back to the unofficial stats, because assists weren't official in the NCAA until the early 80s, you have Magic, who was the last underclassman to do it with assists. Oscar Robertson had four of them. It's only 12 guys who have ever done it, and seven of those guys are all-time NBA players.
Wow.
Ja Morant joined some very heady company yesterday.
That was a nerd segment there for all the nerds out there. Get your grind on. Get it.
It's good
time for your AT&T wake-up call. The Colts have reportedly signed a four-time Pro Bowl linebacker Justin Houston to a two-year, $24 million deal. Indy plans on using him at defensive end this year. See, is this a good fit?
Oh, it's a great fit. They need another rusher. They didn't want to spend long-term money on an old veteran player. So now they have the salary, flexibility moving into the future. Andrew Luck, now, I'm just going to tell you, they might be the favorite in the AFC. They got a good football team and it's put together well. The move.
They were one of the hottest teams in the league after a really tough 1-5 start down the stretch, winning 9 of 10. We saw what they were building. We knew they had a ton of cap space. And I think the key point Chris makes is this two-year deal, it's really a one-year deal with a team option for year two. So if it doesn't work out, they reopen this cap space. If it does work out, they get an elite pass rusher at a bargain rate. It's a great deal for the Colts. Kansas City sees one of their best defensive players walk out the door.
Moving on to Dez Bryant now. The free agent wide receiver still looking to land on a team. The 30-year-old thinks he has plenty left to give, saying, I'll be a steal wherever I go. See, do you agree with Dez Bryant?
Well, he's going to probably be a little over the veteran minimum. Yes, with someone that type of experience. I don't know how athletic he is, so his workout, a private workout, would be important to me. And I'd like to be able to see him put a little 40-yard dash to see what type of speed that he has at this age. So, yeah, but, you know, man, I had a girl tell me one time she was free. And I was like, hey, okay, there's a reason why you're free, too. You're on the street for a reason.
Gosh.
Dez Bryant, same way.
I'm
sure Nick hadn't had that story, but go ahead.
I'm going to channel my inner Jenna Wolf for a second a year ago.
Oh, boy.
If you had to bet, yes or no, does Dez Bryant play in a regular season NFL game again?
Oh, there we go.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. I think it is a coin flip right now. As long as he's been out of football and now coming off the blown Achilles, you're totally right that if he does, it's going to be for the league minimum. The days of big-dollar contracts are over for Dez Bryant. I don't know if he plays again.
All right, another year, another Aaron Rodgers weapon.
She'll get back in the game.
Leaving Green Bay. Last year, it was Jordy Nelson heading to Oakland. This year, it's Randall Cobb heading to Dallas. As far as Cobb goes, after 8 seasons together, the two, Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb, became good friends. Rodgers gave his thoughts on the whole situation on Instagram. He says, I have to remind myself that some birds aren't meant to be caged, and when they fly away, the part of you that knows it was a sin to lock them up does rejoice. Still, the place you live in is that much more drab and empty that they're gone. I guess I just miss my friend. See, Nick, where's it from?
Oh, Shawshank Redemption.
See, what do you make of the Packers' offseason moves so far?
Well, I like the Packers. I like the direction. They've been very, very aggressive, trying to get more defensive help. I think that they've gotten off the philosophy where they can outscore everyone, realizing that Chicago, with a young team, you're going to have to be able to play some defense. Minnesota, with a good team coming back, you're going to have to be able to play some defense. So I like what they've done. They've signed some people, rush the passer, to be able to play some defense in on that frozen tundra of Green Bay. Man, you can't be just an offensive team. And the other note, Aaron Rodgers, no need to be crying. When you ask for that to be the highest paid in football, there's some repercussions from that. Last year, you lost your boy, Jordy Nelson. This year, you're going Shawshank. Now you done lost Cobb. Okay. Yeah, if you could have done the Tom Brady route, you could have gave him a hometown discount. Then you can keep some of your homeboys around on the roster. So before you start complaining and everything, all right, they're relying on you and that new young head coach to generate some of that offense, that all those dollars that they're paying you for.
And I think it's actually the smart approach. Aaron Rodgers, I believe, is the most talented quarterback in the NFL. They clearly think one of the reasons they struggled last year was head coach. So they bring an offensive-minded head coach. Aaron Rodgers, they hope this year is actually going to be healthy, unlike 2 years ago where he breaks his collarbone. Last year, because he didn't miss a ton of games, I think it was underrated how much that injury hampered him throughout the season. He suffers that knee injury in week one, and it, to me, didn't look till week 6 or 7 was he fully healthy from that. But Where have the Packers spent their resources, free agency and the draft? Last year, for two of their first two picks on secondary players. The year before, two second-round picks on secondary players. The year before that, a first-round pick on Kenny Clark, the defensive tackle. They've spent the big free agency money on Za'Darius Smith. They also got, was it Preston Smith, the other outside linebacker. So they are spending their resources there. Now, they have two first-round picks. I would imagine those would probably be on the offensive side of the ball. But the idea is, listen, Aaron, you have Devontae Adams. You have these young receivers who you worked with last year. And by the end of the year, at least with Equanimeous St. Brown, you saw some connection. Make it work there. And Jimmy Graham was an acquisition that was not fully exploited last season. Maybe year two with Jimmy Graham, that will be an improvement. Yeah,
but physically, I believe that they have to just get more physical. As a team, I know in talking to some people in Cleveland, when they were looking at Mike McCarthy, bringing him over to be the head coach there, there was a little concern with the style of practices that Green Bay used to have and the lack of physicality the team had overall. So I like what they're doing free agency. They've beefed up. They're going to try to get after the quarterback. They're going to try to get out of the bottom part as far as bottom third as far as a defensive team. But that physicality has improved. And if Green Bay is going to get the best out of Aaron Rodgers towards the end of his career, I believe it would pay dividends based on what they're doing now.
And it's nice to see the Packers actually participate in free agency this year, the last year, shore up that defense. We haven't seen that the last couple of years. If you're going to have Aaron Rodgers for only a couple more years, you might as well shore up the team around him.
100%. They changed general managers a couple years ago. They changed head coach this year. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be a total shift in franchise philosophy, but a team, they signed as many free agents this offseason as they did maybe in the offseasons for the previous 5 years. Wow. They never would participate in high-level free agency. Za'Darius Smith's a good player now. He was one of the many good players on Baltimore's defense, so that's where they spent their money. And if you are paying your quarterback $30+ million, you typically shouldn't have to pay a bunch of other superstar offensive players aside from the offensive lineman. He should make those other players around him better.
All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, are expectations too high for Le'Veon Bell with the Jets? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here with Bart Scott, we're talking Le'Veon Bell. So all eyes will be on the Jets' new $50 million man. But with Bell sitting out all of last season, his former offensive coordinator, Todd Haley, thinks the team needs to just pump the brakes a little on expectations. He says, I think you have to set the bar a little low to start. Bart, let me start with you. What should we expect from Le'Veon Bell in year one with the Jets? We understand that
life's a gamble. Go get it.
But the running back position is the
A plug for my boy. That's what real friends do. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Jenna didn't get it.
No idea.
That's Le'Veon Bell's mixtape. Go ahead.
Okay. Don't disrespect him.
No. That he was speaking in terms that I would understand. I have mixtapes still. the running back position is the one where there's the easiest to get back into if you've taken the year off, from what I understand from you. So tell me about what year one is going to be like or where your expectations are for Bell.
My expectations for L. Bell is 1,200 rushing and probably 500 receiving. I think that he's going to be refreshed. I think he's going to start off fast, but then he's going to have to get used to getting hit on that level again, because in training camp and practice, you don't get hit like you're going to get hit in the game. Especially now, training camps are a lot different than it used to be. But I think that, you know, a lot of the underrated signings that the Jets have had was the fact that they brought back, they brought in Jameson Crowder, Bellamy to help a little bit. But I think what they really need to do is they need to find and create a position for Quincy Enunwa, because he is good on the outside, and he's almost had 100 yards one time. Mm-hmm. But I feel like he would be perfect to become like the next Delanie Walker, that type of player where he can be matched up against linebackers. He's 6'2", 225. He can get up to about 240, and then he can create that other position, be the other player that teams have to worry about. Because right now, if all they have to worry about is L. Bell, they're going to drop that eighth man in the box. Robbie Anderson on the outside isn't going to demand if you have a legit number one corner.
But what should we expect from Le'Veon Bell in his first season? That he's an all-pro caliber running back. That's what they signed him for. Yep. Like, the Jets weren't like, okay, we know you missed last year, so we're going to ease you. No. Supposed to be fresh because he missed last year. I listened to that 20-minute interview. The one thing he was very clear on was, I feel better than I've ever felt. This is the best my body's ever felt. So
yeah, of course he's going to say that.
Okay, well, whether it's – I think the Jets are – their level of expectation is that they are going to be able to use him like the workhorse he's been his entire career from the word go. He's going to have a full offseason for the first time in a few years. If he was out of shape, he's going to have plenty of time to get back into shape. They signed him to help this offense under Adam Gase with year two of Sam Darnold take the next step. He is the most talented player on this offense, probably the most talented player on the team. It's not about him being a part of what they're doing. He has to be the focal point, the centerpiece of what they're doing.
And not just hand the ball off to him and let him run. This is a team that needs him as a pass catcher also to help with Sam Darnold's development, help him a little bit. We talk about getting on and off the field, staying on the field, getting to the next down. And also, this Jets team, they're not great catching balls and catching those short balls.
Yes, as far as the running backs coming out of the backfield, they're one of the worst in pro football. So looking at him, not only did they have the money, he was the perfect fit. But really, with the questions about what Todd Haley said.
Yeah.
Todd Haley said that your expectations should be tempered a little bit, and he spent 4 years with the guy. Now, Bart, I know you're talking about spending this money on him, but I think he's trying to tell us something here, all right? He's not telling us L. Bell is fat and out of shape. He's not telling us L. Bell can't handle the workload. He was telling us in my first 4 years with him, I think people take for granted. Antonio, people take for granted 100 catches, 1,200 yards. Pittsburgh has a very sophisticated offense. They got a great offensive line. Yep. They utilize their tight ends well, so their personnel, you can't duplicate their personnel. This is what Brian Billick told me was one of the worst things that he did in going from the Minnesota Vikings to the Baltimore Ravens. Yeah, he won a championship with defense, but he could never get the personnel and run the type of offense that he had in Minnesota. Todd Haley's given us a warning. Hey, guys, you better slow down a little bit because you have to build on this. You have to teach him a sophisticated passing game, and you have to implement the whole running game. So maybe my history with him would tell me my expectations should be a little bit tempered because y'all don't know how much football he knows. It's the only offense he ever been in was in Pittsburgh. So it's a whole new learning curve. Yep. You don't play a lot in the preseason. So how was that first month of the season? I always break the season down into five quarters. Teams say, well, it's only four. No. That training camp, I want to hit, man, that first game, coming through that first quarter, man, feeling really good. And then I hit the second quarter, which is the first four games of the season. It's monumental that he gets off to a great start. Expectations, they're unrealistic. And, man, if he doesn't have 100 yards rushing, 80 yards receiving those first couple games, people – Just slow down just a little bit. Let him learn the offense. He's got a second-year quarterback. They're not real talented as far as their overall offensive line and their skill position. So let's just temper our expectations just a little bit.
That's why I said 1,200 yards, because that's under 100 yards a game.
75 yards a game.
Right. And that's why I said create a position for Quincy Enunwa, where you can have somebody
some
that becomes
yes.
a matchup nightmare. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, if you just keep Quincy in his traditional role, then he's not going to garner a double team. But if you put him at a position where he's going to take those linebackers and those safeties away, then it's going to open up things up for Lev Bell. Because you don't have a special number one receiver. Robbie Anderson is trying to be one, but he's like a 1A. He's a guy that's going to run everybody off. And if they're going to do that, they're going to drop that eighth man in the box, and then he may struggle early on. And then how does he adjust there? And also, I want to make sure that I have Le'Veon Bell at a high level for 4 years, not just one.
Right.
So if I do that, I'm going to run my offense. I'm going to let Eli McGuire get more touches and have them share the backfield.
Excuse me. Do you get concerned that this offseason he might have gained some weight?
I don't. It takes 6 weeks to get him to fighting shape.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And what he's saying, the best he's ever felt, you know, I'm sure you felt this way the first year off of retirement. All the inflammation from your joints
get
to go down.
Yeah, food made me come back out there and almost got killed. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Right.
See, he's coming back at 27, right? So it's just like a player coming back from injury that wasn't injured. So, like, he's going to get all the benefits of letting his body rest, but he should be refreshed because he hasn't taken any hits.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.